Chief Justice Annette Kingsland Ziegler presiding, your silence is commanded.
All right, please be seated. Nice full court again. Second oral argument this morning. I think we have Sauk Prairie High School from Sauk County here. Excellent. I like that. Could you all stand up, please? We'd like to say hello. Wow, good group. So afterwards, Justice Crossby, if you have time and you want to come meet with her, she'll meet with you. She can't talk to you about the case, but she can talk to you about anything else that's on your mind. So go ahead and ask her some tough questions.
Awesome. Thanks, Chief.
Anything.
All right, go ahead and have a seat. Nice to have you here today. Colleen, 20, AP, 333. Andre versus City of Milwaukee Board of Fire and Police Commissioners. Appearances, please. All right, good morning. I have the lineup of 25 minutes followed by 35 minutes on rebuttal.
Your understanding as well?
All right, go ahead and proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Brendan Matthews, and I represent the appellant petitioner, Officer Eric Andrade. This case is about knowing what you're accused of and being able to respond thereto before you're terminated employment. Specific to this case, Officer Andrade had a right to know what he allegedly did wrong before he was fired. That didn't happen here, and it's not even close. I want to give a little background of the law here. So this is a petition for a writ of certiorari, and as the court knows, you guys are to review the board's decision, not the decision of the circuit court or the decision of the court of appeals. And on the writ of certiorari, or cert, as I like to say, this court is concerned with two things. One, did the board exceed their jurisdiction? And two, did the board proceed on an incorrect theory of law? Hopefully, when I'm done today and through the briefs, the answer to both those questions will be yes for this court. Then we get into why did the board exceed their jurisdiction and why did they proceed on an incorrect theory of law. That goes to due process. As a reminder, and I know I put it in my brief, but the Dreeble case citing Garrity says police officers are not relegated to a watered-down version of constitutional rights. And I think that's really important because what happened here is not consistent with due process. So to establish a due process violation, we have two things here. We have to show that Officer Andrade had a property interest, and he was deprived of that interest without due process. The property interest, the first element, is not in dispute. Officer Andrade was a police officer with the Milwaukee Police Department. Again, not in dispute. So we have to show that Officer Andrade was deprived of that property interest without due process. Before, and I apologize for this, but I thought this was the cleanest way to do this. So I want to go over how an officer gets disciplined within the city of Milwaukee. First, there's a complaint or an allegation is made. Then that goes to internal affairs. Internal affairs assigns it to a sergeant, and they make a preliminary kind of finding investigation piece saying, hey, we think this is what the violation is going to be, or, you know, we want to look into these things. Then the sergeant, the investigating sergeant, conducts an investigation. And as part of that investigation, he does a PI 21. It's an internal interview, a compelled interview of the involved officer. In this case, Officer Andrade. Once the PI-21 is done, sometimes there's further investigation, but most times that comes at the end of the internal investigation.
Counsel, in regard to that PI-21 and that interview that he had, I believe, with Sergeant Hines, would he have been allowed to have counsel with him at that hearing if he wanted to?
You are entitled under Chapter 164 to the representative of your choice. Generally, that's a union personnel or individual.
I saw he had, I think, Detective Holka with him, but I was wondering if he was allowed to have actual counsel.
They can, theoretically. That's not the practice in Milwaukee in general. The reason for that is, if I can, is that during the compelled interview, the attorney's not allowed to say anything. The only point is to answer the questions that are asked of you. You don't get to ask questions. You don't get to bring up your own things. You're simply, whatever is asked of you, you're compelled to answer that. So that's what happens during those PI-21s. So the PI-21s finish, the sergeant finishes the investigation. He or she does a summary of the investigation. Everything that was uncovered goes into that summary. That summary is then forwarded to a lieutenant at Internal Affairs. The lieutenant reviews the summary and the investigation and decides these are the violations that were found. They pick out what violations of the code of conduct. Okay? Then that goes to the captain of Internal Affairs. Captain checks off, yep, I agree with the lieutenant, or no, I don't, we need to change these things. At that point, charges and specifications are drawn up based on what the lieutenant and captain have decided. And then it is sent to the officer. And that's the lone time the officer gets to respond to those charges, specifications, as well as the content of the investigation before any deprivation occurs in Milwaukee. That's different than other places in the state that follow 6213 or Chapter 59. Because in Milwaukee, under 6250 sub 18, the deprivation occurs immediately. As soon as the chief makes his decision, or her decision, if it's a female, I apologize, as soon as that decision is made, it's effective immediately. Okay? So, when we're talking about Officer Andrade here, in the response to charges, as have been discussed in the briefs, if he didn't know about the testimony piece at all during his response to charges because it wasn't in there. It wasn't in the investigation summary. It wasn't in the lieutenant's cover. It wasn't in the charges and specifications. And what an officer responds to pre-deprivation is those things. They don't have to guess, oh, my ability to testify might be an issue, so I better respond to that. So we've gone over the discipline review process, the law. Now we have to look at how did the board violate Officer Andrade's due process rights. Well, they admit, and the chief admitted at hearing, that Officer Andrade was only fired. He was only discharged because of his perceived inability to testify. That was the lone reason. The chief said, but for that piece, I would not have fired him. I would have suspended him, but I wouldn't have fired him. So we know that's the only reason. Okay? And the other side, and the chief admits, no documents or reports prior to discharge mention the testimony piece. None. It's not in there. Not even impliedly.
In this case, was the, you gave it a number, was the PI-21, the compelled internal interview, was that the interview that was conducted on June 28th of 2018?
Honestly, I wasn't there, and I don't remember off the top of my head. I can find that out for you.
Was that the interview that in the briefing is called the internal affairs interview?
Yes, yes.
And my understanding is that at that interview, your client read out loud some of the standard operating procedures regarding social media sites under the code of conduct for the Milwaukee Police Department, also called Core Value 1.00 for competency. And my understanding is that he read out loud at that June 28, 2018 interview the following, quote, members must be aware that their communication on social networking sites can be used by a skilled defense attorney in impeaching testimony and association with their professional duties as a member of the department. So, I just want to make sure, I'm just trying to understand where in the process that you just laid out did your client read that from the code of conduct?
So, yes, I think I understand your question, Justice Karofsky. So that's during the PI-21 interview. He would have been given that SOP. I believe it's SOP 085. I don't know off the top of my head, but I believe that that's correct. Actually, no.
685.15 sub 5.
Yeah, that's right. But that pertained to the charge one. Charge one was the social media posts themselves. And charge one is not at issue on this appeal. And the penalty for charge one was 30-day suspension. Okay, so if the board's arguments are to be believed, they're basically saying, look, that was read into the record during the PI-21, and as a result of that, because he read it in, he had notice that because of his posts, that, you know, he knew he was going to be fired for an alleged inability to testify. So two things there. One is they never say that you can't testify anymore. That's not what he read in. That's not what the SOP says. It says a skilled defense attorney may use this to impeach you. It doesn't say you can't testify anymore.
But what DA in their right mind is going to put him on the stand after all of this?
I think that's left up to the DAs. I can tell you that according to the Giglio list in Milwaukee County, there's, I think, 116 people at the time of this case on there, many of them still on the department.
That had posts like this, that posted things like this on Facebook? I find that hard to believe.
I don't know the specifics of all their conduct right now. I know that it's in the transcript when I was crossing Chief Deputy District Attorney Levern. We went over it, and I believe there were multiple people that had what I believe to be more egregious conduct than Officer Andrade. But either way, going back to that piece, the penalty for that violation of that SOP was 30 days. If those posts were so bad that he couldn't testify anymore, that penalty had to be the discharge. And it wasn't. It. The chief said that penalty is 30 days.
So, but what I heard you say is he if he knew he was going to be fired, you think Lauderville means that they have to, that he has to have notice of pre-termination of what the consequence could be?
No, you don't
he
have
He knows to. He can be fired. And you go into these hearings, don't you know that there's all kinds of discipline that can be enacted, including being fired? So what exactly, you know, he's told the code, the core values, right? He's given notice of the charges. He's given why, and he's given all of the posts and all of that, and given an opportunity to respond. So I don't understand the comment and what you seem to be relying on is he knew, you said he knew he was to be fired. He knew he was going to be fired. So will you explain that, please, of how what you think exactly that the police department is supposed to do in the future for people to give them this notice that you think they're supposed to have?
Well, I don't think I said that he needed to be fired. If I did, then I maybe
I wrote it down. But
okay, and maybe when he found out he was going to be fired when he got the personnel order from the chief, that's when he knew he was going to be fired.
Right. So what would he have, what would they have had to list out all the possible consequences of posting this? Is that what you think that the police department has to do in the future?
No, I think they had to put him on notice, like they have done previously in other cases. If you look at a court of appeals case, Vidmar, which I cite in my brief, the site is a 2016 WI App 93. That was a case involving an officer, a City of Milwaukee police officer, who was alleged to have stolen a bicycle. And during the course of internal affairs investigation, they found out, hey, they solicited information from the Milwaukee City Attorney's Office, from the U.S. Attorney's Office, and the Milwaukee County District Attorney's Office, hey, will you use this individual as a witness going forward? And they all said no. And that's in the investigative summary, that's in the lieutenant's cover, and that's in the charges and specifications. And not only is it in the charges and specifications, it's a specific charge against him. And so in that case, with Officer Vidmar, he had the opportunity to respond before deprivation, before
so
he was
exactly,
actually fired.
So on page 6 of your brief, you say that the absence of any explanation of the employer's evidence, coupled with the absence of the principal allegation, and then you have in parentheses, inability to testify in court, end of parentheses, in the charging document, denied your client the ability to make any plausible arguments that might prevent the discipline pre-deprivation. What would he have said? Like, I don't understand. These aren't like charges against him. This is a consequence of being discharged. I mean, it's a consequence. You know, he's also not going to be able to wear a uniform anymore, or a badge, or have a car to drive around. There's like a lot of things that happen when you get fired from a job. So, what would he have said? What's the argument?
Well, I respectfully disagree that, you know, it doesn't matter there. But what he would have said is, actually, I can still testify. This isn't a disqualifying thing. And you would have provided expert testimony like I did in the Vidmar case. You provide expert testimony and say, look, yes, they may be Giglio impaired or Brady impaired, but they can still testify. It doesn't disqualify them. Also show, look, there are other people on the department that remain on the department that are Giglio impaired and have served just fine and have served as witnesses. The problem with that notion, too, is if this is coming from the DA's office, right, the alleged, you know, comment that he can't testify anymore is coming from the DA's office, he was testifying.
It was alleged. I think it was actually a comment that was made.
Well, it was brought up at hearing, but he was testifying for that same office up until the day he was discharged. He was chairing a homicide trial, I believe. And he was the one that let that same office know, hey, actually, I think I'm going to be fired today. And, you know, I can't testify for you anymore. So he's supposed to have notice that he can't testify, but the office that's giving him the notice or the one that made that determination doesn't even know that.
At what point in this process, under your theory, do you believe your client should have been notified about his inability to testify? When was that supposed to happen?
Pre-deprivation. That's what Laudermill says. It says there are two essential things in due process. We can talk about due process being flexible, anything like that.
Go back to what you listed out. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I want to put the finest point on this we can. So you laid out all the steps, right? Complaint, the internal investigation with the sergeant, the compelled, the PI 21, the summary report from the lieutenant determines the code of conduct, it goes to the captain, with the lieutenant, they draw up the charges, sent to the officer. Where in that line, that procedure, should your client, according to you, have received notice?
Well, not according to me, according to Laudermill and Matthews.
According
to me today, I apologize, and I'm not trying to be confrontational. I
really want to understand exactly when you think that happened.
So pre-deprivation. So the deprivation occurs when the personnel order comes out. And the only time that he would have been able to respond to those things would be in his response to charges. And that comes out after the charges and specifications are drafted. So in other words, after all the summary's done, the lieutenant makes their decision, charges and specifications are drafted, and then they go to the officer along with copies of the investigation, and then the officer gets to respond to those. So that's the point.
That's the point.
And that's what happened in Vidmar, and that's why this argument wasn't made in that case. But that didn't happen here.
What's the site of, I don't see this in your appendix. What's the site of Vidmar?
2016 WI App 93.
So are you saying it needs to be outlined in the PI 21?
No, they can ask whatever they want in the PI 21, but it needs to be outlined in the documents that are sent to the officer before the deprivation occurs. Again, Laudermill says two essential requirements, the notice and the opportunity to be heard pre-deprivation. So going off that list, that's why I gave it to you guys, the list, where else is there a pre-deprivation opportunity? I'm sorry?
Go ahead. We're not you guys.
Oh, I apologize. To this court,
yeah.
I tend to be a little informal, and I apologize.
Okay, go ahead.
No offense meant. When I laid that out previously to the court, I was trying to demonstrate, look, this is the only opportunity pre-deprivation that it could have occurred, and it's required. It's required. Laudermill says it's not flexible on those things. Those are the essential things. And if you turn to the piece from Matthews on that issue, Matthews, you know, goes into why the interests need to be weighed for the employee and for the government. And they say, and the League of Wisconsin Municipalities completely obliterates this in their brief by saying, look, the government's interest outweighs the employee's interests. But in fact, what Laudermill actually says right after that is that the governmental interest in immediate termination does not outweigh the employee's due process rights. And those due process rights that they're referencing, again, are notice and the opportunity to be heard pre-deprivation.
You referred to the brief of the League of Municipalities, and the brief references your argument and their understanding of your argument at page 12, and it says this. It says, and I'm skipping a bit, but if adopted by this court, your position will end up requiring the public sector supervisors tasked with administration of employee discipline, now I get to the punchline, to list all potential discipline that might be warranted by the employee's conduct, as well as all of the detailed facts and evidence that the employer might rely upon to support both the charges and the potential discipline, that level of exactitude is antithetical to Laudermill's flexible concept of due process. Is that what you're asking? Are you asking predetermination that the public sector supervisors tasked with administration of employees' discipline list all potential discipline that might be warranted by the employee's conduct, as well as the detailed facts and evidence that the employer might rely upon to support the charges and the potential discipline?
No. I'm simply asking for the board and, you know, the chief before it to follow what they've done previously and to actually put someone on notice for the reason that they're firing someone. And that's actually codified in 6250 sub 13, where it says the chief has to file a complaint with the board setting forth the reasons for the discharge. It's undisputed that the reason for the discharge, the only reason, the exclusive reason, the sole reason, whatever word you want to choose there, the only reason for the discharge was an alleged inability to testify. It's the only reason. The chief said, I would have suspended him but for this. And so the statute says it, and Laudermill says it. And Laudermill says those are the essential things. I know that the league and the board have argued that Laudermill is flexible, due process is flexible. It might be flexible, but not on these two things, not on notice and not on opportunity to be heard pre-deprivation.
Well, do you agree that Laudermill does not require any formal written notice of all policy violations?
I don't think it requires notice of every possible violation. Absolutely not. But if it's the violation, absolutely.
Isn't the violation the core value violation?
The core value.
And from which it follows he wasn't able to testify?
But that's not in the specifications. It just says he failed to inspire and sustain the confidence in our community. How are you supposed to know that relates to an alleged inability to testify? Especially in someone in my position where I've seen prior cases where officers are disciplined for an alleged inability to testify, and it's all laid out in the charges and specifications. This was a diversion from the typical path. That's how it plays out. Again, I think Vidmar is a great example.
So I just read Vidmar. And it seems to me that Vidmar did exactly this, which is just in the document itself laid out the core values as apparently was in this case, and the only difference being that there were two letters that were sent to the Internal Affairs, one by the Assistant United States Attorney and one by the Assistant District Attorney, saying that they would not use him to testify. But the actual document that you're talking about in terms of laying out charges, I don't see any difference here in Vidmar. What am I missing?
It's going to be in the record there. They might not have put it in the actual decision. I actually brought the documents for like me to provide them to the court. I know they're not in the record here, and that's why I didn't bring them up like that. But the point in Vidmar is that even the Court of Appeals then is making it clear, look, the investigation included these letters, and that put Officer Vidmar on notice.
They put it in the facts, but I don't know that that's not in the body of the decision about how important these letters were.
Well, I can make an offer of proof that they're in the investigation and that they were provided to Officer Vidmar prior to hearing, and that based on that inclusion in the investigation, that one of the charges and specifications in that case specifically related to alleged inability to testify, that as his counsel, I brought a former U.S. attorney there to say, hey, look, you know, just because he's on this list or might be giglio impaired doesn't mean he can't testify.
At the same time these charges were going through the process, the officer was sitting as head law enforcement on a homicide case. Can you walk me through that?
Yeah, I believe, and I'd have to check for sure, but I believe he was.
Is it in the record?
Yes.
Okay.
He was chairing a homicide trial for the Milwaukee County District Attorney's Office.
At the exact same time?
Correct. At the time of his firing, which would have been the time of the deprivation, he was the chair of a homicide trial for the Milwaukee County District Attorney's Office.
And he testified? He was testifying in that case?
Yes.
Had he already testified?
I don't recall. I believe it was still going on.
Did the defense attorney in that case know about the pending disciplinary action against him?
I don't know that.
But the DA's office
allegedly knew.
Was he already on the list?
Allegedly, again, that's the record says that The chief met with the district attorney's office prior to deciding to discharge Officer Andrade, and based on the recommendation from the district attorney's office that Officer Andrade could no longer testify, he was then discharged.
And his Facebook posts have been publicized by the media nationwide at that point in time, right?
Yes. Yes, and just because I know this tangentially relates to Sterling Brown, I want to make it clear, and this is in the record as well, that there were numerous officers there, I believe more than a dozen that were involved in that. The only officer who wasn't disciplined for his interactions with Sterling Brown was Officer Andrade.
Is that in the record, Counselor?
That is in the record, yes.
The reason I ask that is we generally don't take offers of proof in this court, so we've got to stay with the record.
And is it in the record, this information about him being chairing a homicide trial at the time that this was?
He said it was.
Okay. I believe it's in both of my briefs. I believe it's in the petition as well. I think it's in the Court of Appeals decision.
Okay.
I have all the briefs there. I mean, it's been consistent. So I was thinking about this case on the way here. I want to get this out. And I was thinking about, you know, how this actually played out. And, again, I was trying not to think about this case, but I was. And I thought about, like, what if I got a subpoena to come here today, to come to this court, to come to the state capitol? And I had no idea, am I testifying in front of a budget hearing? Am I going to a committee meeting? Am I meeting with the governor? I have no idea. But I'm said to show up here at 11 o'clock today. Am I giving oral arguments in the Wisconsin Supreme Court? I have no idea, because the subpoena just says, hey, be here. And that's exactly what happened to Officer Andrade. He said, you're fired. And then he found out later on, I would have found out today at 11 a.m., hey, you're doing an oral argument in the Wisconsin Supreme Court. He found out after the fact that, you know, he was fired for this. I see my time's up.
You can finish your sentence.
I was just going to say that's the parallel to this case, that same situation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice, members of the court, and may it please the court. My name is Stacey Rosenzweig, and I'm here on behalf of the respondent, City of Milwaukee Board of Fire and Police Commissioners. With me at council's table is Deputy City Attorney Jennifer Williams, and my colleagues with me are Daniel O'Brien and Sherry Chevalier. We heard a lot today, including testimony from Mr. Andrade's counsel about what was missing and what process Mr. Andrade believed he should have received that he didn't get. I'd like to focus today on the process Mr. Andrade did receive in the context of the two questions this court accepted for review and why that process was consistent with the flexibilities permitted by Loudermill, Matthews v. Eldridge, and statute. Let's take a look at these flexibilities. First, the Loudermill standard, which applies to pre-termination process. What counsel missed was that it applies to a pre-termination process and is dependent on whether there is an appropriate, neutral post-termination process. We agree that Loudermill controls. Under the due process clause, an individual must be given notice and an opportunity to respond before he's deprived of the property interest. Loudermill states that this determination does not have to definitively resolve the propriety of the discharge, but needs to be an initial check against mistaken decisions. The employee is entitled to have an explanation of the employer's evidence. That's been a sticking point for Mr. Andrade. But per Loudermill, this pre-termination notice was more than sufficient because it was coupled with that administrative process, and he was presented with an explanation of the evidence. The Facebook posts were the evidence. And that brings us to the Matthews balancing test. Matthews?
Counsel?
Yes.
Loudermill says, and I don't have it in front of me, employer's evidence. Is that correct? Are the words right?
There needs to be an explanation of the evidence.
There's a qualifying word there before the word evidence. I don't have it in front of me. Then there's a comma and something else. And I thought to myself, evidence of what? Evidence of discharge or evidence that is the consequence of a violation, or is it evidence of the violation? What are we talking about here under Loudermill?
That's the thing, Your Honor, is that Loudermill is flexible. It doesn't specify exactly what quantum of evidence is required to support a termination decision at that point.
I'm not asking about the quantum.
Okay.
I'm asking about evidence of what? Evidence of violation or evidence supporting the level of discipline?
And again, the statement in Loudermill isn't particularly clear. It does not specify what items, what objects, what testimony, what needs to be there. And that speaks to the flexibility of this pre-termination standard and why this is more of a, it's a gut check. It's a check, is this the right decision? Do I have, as the chief of police or the school board, the superintendent of schools or whatever, whoever's doing that, do I have enough probable cause to do this? When it's coupled with a robust post-termination process, as happened here, this was sufficient.
How do we know that? Because to the other Justice Bradley's point, and I have it right in front of me, Loudermill says a tenured public employee is entitled to, among other things, an explanation of the employer's evidence. And Mr. Laverne did testify, so he was providing evidence of Andrade's inability to be used as a witness. So that's evidence, and his argument is he didn't get an explanation of it. So how are we supposed to decide whether or not it was okay to admit that from the employer's explanation of evidence?
Well, the charging documents are notice documents, and the pre-termination process is essentially a notice process. Mr. Andrade was afforded a robust process, and he was told why he was being terminated. He was not being terminated. He was being terminated because he violated the core principle that stood for the proposition that he failed to sustain or to inspire and sustain the confidence of the community.
But then Chief Morales did say that the only reason he discharged him was because of his inability to perform the duties of a police officer, specifically testifying in court, because he could be impeached by a skilled or savvy defense attorney.
Right. Thank you, Justice Bradley. I think that gets us into a clever cross-examination can torpedo a termination on technicalities. That is a hyper-technical argument with respect. He did say that this was the tipping point. This was Chief Morales. This is what tipped it from severe discipline or serious discipline, I don't recall the exact word, into a termination. But at the end of the day, this was a consequence of that violation. The violation from count one was the violation of the policy. And that can't possibly be decoupled from count two, which is why we're here today. I know Mr. Andrade throughout this process has tried to say, oh, the social media policy, this violations, that only counts for count one. And now that we're into this some vague, nebulous count two that doesn't include that violation, it's only the failure to inspire confidence, we can't decouple those.
But why can't we? Because it was the failure to inspire confidence, or I don't remember the exact words, I don't have them in front of me, but that was the basis for the discharge. The social media posts, the violation of the social media policy was not. I think there was a 30-day suspension imposed for that, correct?
There was, but if you take a look at the August, I believe it was August 23rd, 2018, notice of the charges, that was the document, that was the pre-termination document that I believe counsel was referring. That includes in both of those statements that it was the social media posts that caused that violation, that led to the failure of Mr. Andrade to be able to inspire and sustain confidence of the community.
So it sounds like your argument is that he was not discharged because he could not testify, because, in fact, he was testifying up to the date of discharge, right?
Well, it was a consequence. And I understand and acknowledge that that Chief Morales did use the term this was the reason. I think these are angels dancing on a head of a pin. This was the reason is testimony of a non-lawyer, a police officer, discussing a consequence, and this is a dire consequence. This is a consequence that does fail to sustain and or inspire and sustain the confidence of a community.
Can you help me with the point that your friend on the other side was making, which was he's being disciplined/terminated because he's not
able to testify because he's on the DA's list, and at the same time he is sitting at counsel table apparently testifying on a homicide case. Was he not on the list? But he was on the list. I'm having a really hard time reconciling what I'm hearing today.
Thank you, Justice Karofsky. The best we can tell from the testimony of ADA Laverne was that he should have been on the list. He placed him on the list. He doesn't know what happened. He was not aware as he sat there that this testimony was going on. So while it would be speculative or at least inferred from circumstances, it sounds like there may have been a ball dropped, but he was supposed to be on that list and he was supposed to be taken off, and he wasn't for whatever reason. It's not in the record what that reason was.
Do you agree with the Court of Appeals in its analysis of these questions? Are there any places where you depart from it?
That's a good question, Justice Hagedorn. I'm not sure I framed it like that. I do, I agree with the overall conclusion that there was sufficient process here, and that the lack of a specific reference to this consequence is not fatal, because in particular he had notice. He had actual notice, and I believe the Court of Appeals decision made that, that this was going to be an issue. During that PI-21 interview, which, as noted, he had the representative of his choice. It could have been a lawyer. He chose not to use a lawyer. 7 pages into that interview, the transcript is in the record at, I believe, record number 11. 7 pages into that that record, and as Justice Karofsky pointed out, Mr. Andrade read out loud that SOP, subparagraph 10. This is a long SOP. We're talking about subparagraph 10. It's a lot of things in there, but members must be aware their communication on social networking sites can be used by a skilled defense attorney in impeaching testimony in association with their professional duties as a member of the department. So as of June 2018, he was on notice that this could be a problem. And then, remember, the Loudermill standard also anticipates a robust post-termination hearing or opportunity to be heard with a neutral adjudicator, which this was. This was a 3-member panel of the Board of Fire and Police Commissioners with a hearing examiner, Conrad. And let's talk a little bit about what Mr. Andrade had before him during that period. Counsel, again, testified that if he were coming in here, he analogized this. He analogized what happened with Mr. Andrade to coming in here and being handed a list of what you're going to be arguing. That's far from the case. The termination documents were provided on September 12th. On November 19th of 2018, Mr. Andrade, by counsel, filed a witness list for the hearing that was to occur a month later. Also filed an exhibit list. That witness list included a reference to ADA Laverne and referenced a subpoena deuces tecum for that Brady Biglio list. So he obviously knew this was going to be an issue for the hearing, the post-termination due process, that fail-safe in case the pre-termination process didn't do its job. So he knew that was going to be an issue.
What did he know would be an issue? He knew that Laverne was maybe going to testify because he was on the witness list, but how would he know what Laverne was going to testify to? And he certainly couldn't have known that he would testify, well, he can't be a witness anymore since he was just a witness.
Actually, other parts of that witness list suggest otherwise. Or on the exhibit list, references a September 13, I believe, 2018 interview on the issues with Mike Goucher. That was also referenced in the hearing in the transcript. I don't think it was played, but it was referenced. And during that interview with Chief Morales said, yeah, this presents huge problems for this person being able to testify. That was also referenced in the amicus brief from Black leaders.
But all of that is belied by the fact that he was, in fact, testifying up to the day of discharge.
And, I understand that we don't know exactly what happened. ADA Laverne suggested that this was an oversight or something like that. He wasn't supposed to. It's not in the record what happened with that testimony, whether he actually did, whether he was impeached with that information. It's not in the record. We don't know.
Help me out as to why that matters. I mean, the challenge here isn't to whether he was rightly terminated or whether he could or couldn't actually testify. It was about the notice question. So I'm just trying to figure out what relevance we should ascribe to that point. I mean, it obviously is a fascinating, you know, point here, but I'm trying to figure out why it matters to the notice question.
Well, per Loudermill, the notice question is coupled with that post-termination process. So what he knew and what was able to prepare for, he called witnesses that testified. He called the union president, Michael Crivello, who testified as to the Brady exclusions or as to the Giglio exclusions. Mr. Crivello testified that he didn't think this was Brady evidence at all and that it wouldn't serve to impeach anybody. But that means that that indicates that he was prepared to discuss this. He wasn't going in blindsided. So that the post-termination process provided that safeguard regardless. And, you know, the Loudermill standard doesn't require perfection or magic words in the pre-termination stage. It requires this interplay from pre and post.
Where in the record is any mention of ability to testify at the hearing?
And we acknowledge that it was not in the charging documents or in the summary. It came up throughout the hearing itself. It came out throughout the two-day post-termination disciplinary hearing, which occurred, I believe, on December 18th and 19th of 2018.
So what was the context in which it came up? Did he testify and say, you're saying you're going to fire me because you think I can't testify, but I'm sitting in a trial right now and I'm the chair of the trial. I have testified or I haven't testified, but I'm going to be called as a witness, or we've had 10 convictions with me testifying and being questioned on this. Was there anything so that we know that was a vetted issue?
Are you asking whether it came out during that trial he was chairing? Was that your question?
The hearing.
The hearing.
Dealing with this. Because I'm thinking, if I think I'm going to be fired because I can't testify, I would want to offer the fact that I am chairing a trial right now and that I have or will be, and how many times I have, how many convictions have resulted, how I'll be impeached, or how that will play out. I would think I'd want to address that if I knew my job was on the line because I can't testify anymore. But at the exact same time, the exact same office that says he will not be used ever as a witness has him chairing a trial. That's what I want to know. Was that addressed anywhere in the hearing?
It was addressed throughout the hearing. The matter of him, it did come up as to the fact he was chairing the trial. I'm not sure, as I sit here, whether Mr. Andrade testified to it himself. Mr. ADA Laverne did. This was a two-day hearing. The first day was more or less, I think there might have been a little bit on the second day, but the first part of the hearing, the first phase, was talking about the violations. The second phase went into the discipline, broad strokes. And it came up during both phases, the fact that he couldn't testify. Chief Morales testified, ADA Laverne testified, and then Mr. Andrade called some witnesses of his own, including Mr. Crivello, who testified that he could. This wouldn't be a problem. I don't know if Mr. Andrade addressed the specific point as to I don't recall whether he was chairing a case or what and I don't think it got down to any sort of conviction rate level or anything like that. This hearing occurred a couple of months after the termination. So I believe the homicide trial he was chairing occurred pre-termination. He wasn't on that once he was terminated.
So you think the hearing record makes clear that his job was on the line because he couldn't testify?
I mean, that is in the record during that hearing. We again acknowledge that the pre-hearing, the charging documents, the investigative report doesn't explicitly say that, but again, it goes back to that beginning of the investigatory interview, 7 pages into the 56-page document where he was told that this would be a problem and that his ability to testify that his testimony could be impeached. Neither Loudermill nor Matthews nor any other case that I've looked at talks about this in terms of degrees of notice. He was told that this could be a problem. He wasn't told explicitly during this investigative interview or otherwise that in fact, he couldn't testify at all. But Again, he knew and had to know, and his counsel knew because he prepared to discuss this at trial and was able to discuss this at trial, that this was the consequence.
But the DA's office could deal with a witness being impeached. Witnesses get impeached all the time. It's a completely different matter if somebody is, for lack of a better word coming to mind, disqualified altogether from testifying. And he could not have known that because he was, in fact, testifying up to the date of discharge. So I think your point is well taken, well made, that he was aware that it might be the subject of impeachment. A defense attorney might say, well, what about this officer, Andrade, this situation and these posts? But he didn't know, right? He did not know at the time of the hearing that he was viewed as somebody who couldn't testify at all and therefore could not fulfill the job duties.
Well, the record does show that he mentioned this himself to somebody in the DA's office about that homicide trial, that I'm about to get fired, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. I don't recall the exact words.
Well, he couldn't testify. I mean, I suppose he could testify after he got fired, but he's right. not an officer anymore.
Yeah, there's nothing stopping. And some of the people on the Brady list, the Giglio list, are no longer with the force. But, of course, people who are retired or who are otherwise not on the force can be called to testify. It does happen.
What's the relationship between the standard operating procedures and the core values?
The standard operating procedures, the core values, in this context, the core value of competence refers to the standard operating procedures. You are tasked with knowing what your job entails and what you are allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do. So in the case of count one, that was a specific violation for violating one of the SOPs as incorporated into that core value. Here, the core values and guiding principles in count two are a bit broader. That one is the integrity count that discusses not being able to inspire and sustain the confidence of the community. And that is broad. Here, based on the charging documents, it was, again, a violation of that social media policy and specifically the effects of the social media policy, horribly insensitive, inflammatory, and at times racist or racially charged posts that were made that failed to inspire the confidence of the community. And when we talk about proof of that failure to inspire this confidence, there is proof beyond the ability to testify. That's one of those proofs. Surely if the DA doesn't think you can be called credibly, if a defense counsel expert witness, Craig Mastantuono, said, this is what I would do with it and how I would tear you apart. If jurors can't find you credible, that fails to inspire the confidence of the community. All of this information was spread worldwide. This made it, I think there was a reference to Sputnik Media out of Russia that this made this to, not because of what Mr. Andrade did with the Sterling Brown during that arrest. There's nothing in the record to suggest he did anything wrong that night. It's what happened the next morning and after that, and the publicity and the shame, the discredit brought to the department. He had to give up his Bucks tickets. People were calling him racist. Chief Morales testified that he got calls from his peers in law enforcement through the country who were like, ugh, I wish you luck. All of that speaks to the failure to inspire the confidence of the community. And I think it's hard here to talk about what happened without talking about the posts themselves. I'm not going to go into detail. They're horrible. Milwaukee has a long history of tension and hypersegregation, particularly between the black community and the police. All of these posts diminished the and there's testimony in the record that these were problematic. He posted about getting 5 hours of overtime and a use of force when in District 5, which is a Northside primarily black jurisdiction. He posted about potentially an opposing basketball player who didn't do well in a playoff game, maybe he should be parking in a double parked in a Walgreens parking lot, with the implication that maybe he should be tased and arrested and embarrassed like Sterling Brown was. The city has an interest in making sure that police officers who do these things are not are appropriately disciplined. That speaks to the Matthews factor. They do have that interest there. And while the due process rights of a police officer, no, they're not supposed to get due process light or diet due process or whatever you want to call it, due process is still a malleable subject, regardless of who the subject is. There is nothing to suggest that Mr. Andrade required a pre-criminal charging level of due process. That is not the interest that's implicated here. This is a civil property interest in his continued employment. As we're talking about the pre-termination, he got a lot of process here. This is something that I think is missing from the discussion. He got the PI 21 notice informing the member that it recited the brief narrative regarding the Facebook post, referenced the governing rules. Now, that's not the required due process notice, but this is what's required under Chapter 164, the Law Enforcement Officer's Bill of Rights. He needed to be told that he could face discipline for this and that he had the right to a representative of his choice, and he was.
Counsel, do you know when he was first notified that the department was considering discharge as a form of discipline?
I'm not entirely sure. It wasn't when the complaint was issued in September. He received a document in August of 2018 outlining the violations and the, but I don't believe that contained the discipline in there. Whether there's some other conversation, it's not reflected in the record.
I note in footnote 9 of the Court of Appeals opinion that it seems to give great moment in its last sentence to the request by counsel of the Brady Giglio list. And it states in the last sentence of footnote 9, although Andrade disputes that he had notice, he fails to explain why he would request the Brady disclosure list if he was unaware that it was a concern. Even though it's in a footnote, it seems as though the Court of Appeals gives some emphasis to this, and you give emphasis to that. Why should that really enter into the equation?
Thank you, Justice Bradley. Because the argument here from Mr. Andrade is about notice, about what he knew. I believe the statement was knowing what you're accused of. And if he didn't know what he was accused of or what he had to defend, he would have had no reason to request that information to subpoena ADA Laverne. I do think that particular footnote, although we're looking at the decision of the board and not of the Court of Appeals, I think the sentiment reflected in that footnote should be given some weight.
So I'm looking at the transcript, page 65. It looks like Sergeant Hines is testifying. Is that the person that did the investigation and report?
He did the investigatory interview and contributed to the report, although the report was a collaborative effort between, I think, three officers.
Okay. I'm just looking at testimony at page 67. It talks about you did the summary after you finished your investigation. I believe so, yes. No one in your report does it mention anything about a prosecuting agency saying that Officer Andrade can't testify, right? That was not brought to my attention ever. It was brought to my attention, but it was not part of the conversation. But it was not in your report, no. Just looking at the report itself, is it fair to say that his ability to testify wasn't investigated by you? It wasn't part of my investigation, no. And he was the one who did the PI 21 as well, right?
I believe so.
So whose investigation was it a part of?
Again, this was a group investigation. The first day of testimony, Lieutenant David Feldmeyer testified that He was another person that contributed to the report and signed off on it. He testified that this consequence didn't constitute the violation. The violations were the core values and guiding principles. The rest was consequence, and that's why it was not included in the report. That's on page 191 and 192 of the first day of testimony. I don't have the record site in front of me. With that, Your Honor, my time is almost up. If nobody has any other questions, I will yield the balance.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. So I want to briefly cover 6250.13 because we haven't covered that at all. And it's part of this petition in front of this court. And that subsection says that when the chief discharges someone or, you know, suspends someone, but in this case discharges someone, they have to file a complaint with the board setting forth the reasons for the discipline. Again, nothing in that complaint talks about the inability to testify. And that goes to, is this a reason? Is the inability to testify a reason, or is it a consequence? The chief admitted it was a reason. Okay, a consequence in this situation was the loss of a job, the loss of income. Those are consequences.
Is inability to testify a violation? And if so, what do you point to regarding the violation?
Yes, it's a violation of the integrity rule. And again, that's in the Vidmar case, that he was specifically discharged for a perceived inability to testify. And it's happened before in other cases.
But that's core value that he's discharged for. There's nothing called inability to testify, right?
It's laid out in the specifications. So the charges themselves say violation of core value X, guiding principle X, or guiding principle Y, and then they lay out the actual basis, the reasons for that violation. And in this case, the reasons for the violation on charge two for Officer Andrade were failing to inspire and sustain confidence in the community. So we've talked about my approach at hearing, and so I want to go back to that for a second on that point, is that when I saw that charge, why Officer Andrade was discharged, I thought to myself, okay, how do I disprove a failure to inspire and sustain confidence in the community? So you'll see in the record, I brought in community members, and I said, are you familiar with this Facebook post? Does that change your confidence in him? Does that fail to inspire you? That's what we did, because that's how I thought to defend myself. I didn't think, oh, I need to disprove an inability to testify. Okay, and that goes to, why did I put those individuals on the witness and exhibit list, and why did I subpoena Chief Deputy District Attorney Lovern with the deuces tecum on the Giglio list? I asked him for that list because I've done this before.
Okay, I don't know that this is stuff that is in the record, that you can tell us what underlying thoughts were. I don't know. It just feels uncomfortable to me.
Okay.
Well, counsel, I thought the argument was underdeveloped. I didn't see any law cited. I didn't see any statute cited. So is what you're arguing that it wasn't in your brief, the analysis of 6250.13, but rather witnesses were brought to the hearing? Is that what you're trying to say?
I'm trying to say that why did I ask for that list? And it's been alleged today that I asked for that list because Officer Andrade knew that the testimony piece was part of this. And that's not true.
And what Justice Dallas just said, and I apologize for cutting her off, do you, is the information that she's referring to contained in our record anywhere?
Yeah, I believe so.
You believe so, or you know so?
That individual was named?
No, why you did it. Is that in here somewhere that says the only reason
was
because...
I believe I briefed that to the Court of Appeals because it was brought up, that same thing, and I said I'm being punished.
In our record.
I don't know, so I apologize. Okay. And I don't want to go out of bounds here, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Going back to the reason versus consequences, the chief admitted it was a part of his decision, so it can't be a consequence of the decision. It cannot be a consequence of the decision if it's a reason for the decision. The reason I fired him was because of the testimony piece. That's what he said. He didn't say a consequence of me firing him is that he can no longer testify. Or a consequence of the Facebook post is that he can no longer testify because the Facebook posts were covered in charge one, which again is not an issue, and the penalty for that was 30 days. We've also had a lot of discussion about, there's been talk about Loudermill being flexible, and I want to go back to that because, again, Milwaukee is unique statewide in 6250 sub 18 in that the deprivation occurs right away, not after a hearing. And that's really important because once that personnel order was issued on September 12, 2018, notice had to be given before that and an opportunity to respond had to be given before that, had to be afforded to Officer Andrade before that, before September 12, 2018. And that didn't occur. Opposing counsel has admitted that. That did not occur. Lauderdale's not flexible on that point. It says those two things are essential. I see I'm out of time.
You
thank
may
you very
finish
much.
Your sentence if you'd like to.
I'm good. Thank
okay.
you very much.
All right.
Appreciate
thank you
it.
Very much. Interesting oral argument. We are adjourned. We'll reconvene open conference at 1:30, but the people from the classes and anyone else who would like to stay could do so and meet with Justice Karofsky.